This is the Medicast, February 5th, 2007.
Transmitters? We don't need no stinking transmitters!
This is the Medicast, a podcast for EMS providers by EMS providers, featuring EMS news, products, tips, tricks, and commentary. So grab your gear and glove up. Here's today's show with the Podmedic, Jamie Davis.
Well, good day and welcome to the Medicast, episode 52. This week is the Medicast's first birthday. That's right, back in the first week of February in 2006, I posted the first episode of the Medicast podcast. And if you want to listen to how rusty I was and how young the show was and rough it was around the edges, you can head back and check out the podcast category in the show notes and check back at that first episode. But, you know, I took a listen to it, and there's some valuable information in there, including some information on some tricks on how to deal with people in cold weather. And I got an email from a listener about that, which I'll touch on here shortly. But it's my blanket warmer trick using the defroster on the dashboard of your ambulance. So if you want to go back and listen to that episode, you can check that out. Of course, if you're a brand new listener to the Medicast, I want to welcome you to the show, and I want to encourage you to listen to a couple of episodes. Check back in the archives to episodes that might be of interest to you. You can check out the website at www.medicast.com. And over at the website, if you look on the left-hand side, you'll see a link for the lists for the tip and trick of the week and list for the med of the week. So you can check out those lists and link back to old podcast episodes, including the show notes. And you can get listen to the show there, download it for yourself, or check out the links in the show notes for those episodes. Of course, if you're a long-term listener, I want to thank you for being a member of this community and for all of your contributions, all of your comments, and all of your corrections. Sometimes I'm going to make mistakes, and I really rely on you, the podcast listeners, to keep me on track and make sure that I'm giving the best possible information out in the show. And I appreciate all of that. That said, let's jump right on into this week's listener email. I got quite a bit of email to go through here. The first one is from listener Tom, and he was requesting if he could put a link to the episode up in the fire department show website. Absolutely, Tom, and anybody out there who wants to link back to the Medicast, I greatly appreciate that. He also was talking about the episode on meth labs that I put up last week and was interested in that information and thought it was very valuable. So, Tom, thanks for your comments, and thanks for checking in on the show. Please keep all of the comments coming. I also got a link, a question from a listener, Alex, who is an EMTB and a wilderness medical technician, and he was wondering where I got all of the music for the show. Well, there's always a link to the music in the show notes. So I put up a link to the artist's webpage, or if I got it from a PodSafe music service like the PodSafe Music Network or GarageBand.com, I put a link to that service up in the show notes as well. So you will find links in the show notes to all of this stuff. Basically, I get the music from a couple of different places. I pick up music from the PodSafe Music Network, which is Adam Curry's, part of Adam Curry's company. Adam Curry, one of the founders of podcasting, perhaps the founder of podcasting, depending on who you talk to. And you can find that at music.podshow.com. Now, you don't have to be a podcaster to listen to music on that site, but you do need to have a podcast feed to get permission to download music from that site. But it's a great place to listen to some really great music, and you can often find the music for sale over at the iTunes store. You can also listen to sites like the GarageBand.com, and there's just tons of other independent music sites out there. Another great resource is if you go on to MySpace.com, a lot of bands have MySpace pages, and you can listen to their music directly there, and some of them even provide access to download the song there. I also really value the listeners who send me links to bands they're members of to download music or recommend me friends' bands that they like to listen to. As long as the music is original music, so it's not a cover song, and the band gives me permission to play the song on the show, I would be happy to get links like that from you all. So if you're in a band or have a friend who's in a band and would like me to check out their music, if I like it, I will go ahead and put it up there. So make sure they send me a link to a couple of different songs and I'll listen to what there is. I'll try to play and encourage play of all kinds of different independent music sources. The other thing is, if you're interested in the songs you hear on the Medicast, again, I always put a link in the show notes to that music, and you'll also see a link to a list on the iTunes store that lists all of the songs that they currently have available in their service that I have played. So if you go into that list, you can check out the music I've played in past episodes. And if you like it, you can go ahead and purchase it there for yourself. So that kind of answers your question, I hope, Alex. I know I shot you an email back with some of this stuff too, but I'm sure there were other listeners out there that had similar questions. So thanks for your comment, Alex. It's greatly appreciated. There's actually a couple more here. I have a question from a listener, Wesley, who wanted to know about when I was going to include some more information for people that were getting ready to take the registry test. Wesley, I'm going to try to keep including that information as I come to it. It comes and goes. I try to intersperse questions like that a lot for my tips of the week and Med of the Week, along with other things that come up either in the news or have occurred to me that I think is important information to get out there. So keep listening, Wesley. I included something on the EpiPen in this week's episode and the Med of the Week coming up in a little bit later in this podcast. So for those of you that are in the getting ready to take the National Registry EMTB exam, there'll be a med for you towards the end of this podcast. So keep on listening. And I'll provide more information on that kind of stuff as I come to it. I am looking to put together a list of maybe a separate CD or download that maybe for a nominal fee I can get together for you and make available to listeners. If that's something that would interest you, let me know. It's going to take some time for me to put something like that together and basically going to have to create that from scratch. But if it's something you're interested in, I can make it available for you. So, Wesley, thanks for your comment. And I also got a response back from somebody else who was a member of a academic or university-based EMS service. And this is from listener Woody, and he just wanted to touch base that he's a member of a first response team that is an on-campus job where he attends school. And he just wanted to touch base with me about how he works with, they use alphanumeric pagers and respond with security to student injuries and student illnesses on campus. And, you know, Woody, if you run across anything or anybody else out there that lives in a college town and responds, if you run across anything, new club drugs, new emergencies you're running across in this age group, please get back to me and let me know. I'd like to share that information with the rest of the listeners. Finally, I want to send a thank you out to listener Chris. Chris sent me a comment about a recent podcast that I covered humor in EMS and talked about it a little bit. And the response he gets from people and when he's made comments about things in the field. And, you know, it's one of those things, Chris, I appreciate it, about EMS humor. It's just one of those things that we are the only ones that understand this kind of thing. People that deal with the kind of things we deal with in the medical field. So I want to thank you for that. And I also want to thank Chris for being a great contributor to comments on the website. You can all go over to the website, and if you find an article or a posting that I put up there throughout the week, you can leave a comment at the bottom of that post. You'll see a link for comments. Click on that link, fill out the basic quick information. Just make sure I don't have a spammer sending me links. You can go ahead and leave a comment right there about what you found on the website. I always try to respond directly to those comments really quickly. Usually takes a day or so for me to get back to them and make sure they get posted. But I want to thank Chris for being just a great contributor and the other people that have sent comments over to the website. It really makes the site a little bit better when there are comments and questions coming in from you guys that are coming over to the site. So make sure you head over to medicast.com and check out the website there. There'll be links for the show notes for this episode. And I try to post up maybe 4, maybe 5 different articles of different things I find during the week that might be of interest to you, things that you might want to read over at the MedicCast blog. So check out that. And Chris, thanks again. If you want to get a hold of me at the MedicCast, you can, of course, leave a comment, as I described a few minutes ago. You can also leave me an email at podmedic@mac.com, and I'll get back to you and also maybe read your email on the air. I like getting comments from you all. It really helps me come up with new information and things to provide for you in the episode, and I appreciate that. You can also reach me by voicemail at area code 941-306-3342. That's 941-30-MEDIC, and that's the MedicCast voicemail line. It is a voicemail line, so you're not actually going to get me on the phone, but you will be able to leave a message there for the podcast, and I can play your comments on the show. If you want to leave your email, leave it at the very end of the comment, and I'll go ahead and clip that off so it doesn't go out over the general feed, but that way I can get back to you if I need clarification or want to just respond to you, which I'd like to be able to do. Without further ado, I want to jump right on in here to the meat of the podcast, and I'm going to start off with this week's link of the week. Peter Canning runs a great blog over at Streetwatch Notes of a Paramedic, and you can find that at medicscribe.blogspot.com. I have a link to this in the show notes. Peter's been a guest on the show numerous times. He's a great contributor to this podcast, and he has written some great posts this past couple of days on some cardiac arrests that he's run in the field where he's had patients that just, for lack of any other thing, just would not die. And this sounds like it's kind of a callous way to talk about it, but these were patients who should have been called and been coded dead, but they just kept coming back. You know, he was doing everything right. He was following his protocols. He was really running excellent code management. And you can read a complete rundown of everything that he did for these two codes. There's part one and part two. I have links to both in the show notes, and I urge you to check these out, plus all of Peter's other great information. If you like what Peter writes about, you might also enjoy checking out his books. He's written two books about his involvement in getting involved in the EMS field and what his experiences were getting started in being an EMS provider. And I just really value Peter's friendship with the podcast and all of the information he puts up on his blog. So check it out over at medicscribe.blogspot.com. And if you want links to the two particular posts I'm talking about, you can check the links in the MedicCast show notes. This week in the news has been really rough for EMS providers around the country. There's been several deaths involved with responses and motor vehicle accidents involving ambulances, as well as deaths involved with an explosion in West Virginia. For those of you that check out the EMS websites like GEMS or EMSresponder.com, you've probably already read about this. But and if you listen to the MedicCast News, I actually touched on this explosion in the last episode of the MedicCast News, which you can get at MedicCastNews.com. But in Ghent, West Virginia, members of the fire department there were responding to a report of a propane gas leak inside a building to a convenience store. I'm not sure why the convenience store wasn't completely evacuated. Apparently, there was somebody from the gas company there working on the line to try to figure out where the leak was. A paramedic and a firefighter responded to the scene in their personal vehicles, as well as a building inspector from the local, municipality. And EMT Craig Dorsey and volunteer and former fire chief Fred Burrows from the Ghent Volunteer Fire Department were killed when that convenience store cataclysmically exploded as a result of this gas leak. Pieces of this building fell into yards a half mile away. There was nothing left of this place but rubble. A fire truck was pulling into the scene and pulling into the parking lot when the blast occurred and was caught in the blast. There were many people injured. These two deaths are really shaking that community here. And I think it just bears touching on, really, really be careful and review your department's policies on responding to calls like this. I know I'm a member of a volunteer service, and in situations, sometimes it's easier for me or others to go directly to the scene and meet the apparatus there, but you need to make sure you're on top of what your department's protocols are and that you're using appropriate scene safety. Now, I don't know exactly what was going on, if these guys were trying to evacuate the building and get people out of there. We need to educate our communities that when there's a fire and when there's a problem like this, that they need to get the heck out and get far away and let the professionals come in and deal with it. I'm not sure that would have stopped this explosion from occurring, and there was somebody there working on it, and maybe, you know, the owners of the business didn't want to shut their business down because they had a repairman there. They figured they could get it taken care of. But this is really just an example for us in other areas to be really, really aware of what can happen when things go horribly wrong. You know, when we go to gas leaks, and we get a lot of them, especially this time of year as people are using their heating systems and really ramping things up to stay warm, we get a lot of calls for gas leaks in a building or gas leaks in a residence. And it turns out to usually be nothing or something relatively minor, but we don't know that until we get there and until someone assesses fully what the situation is. So we really, really, really need to be on top of being safe at the scenes. I end every single episode with scene safety. Okay, and BSI. Well, scene safety applies to all areas of the fire and EMS service. We need to be aware that the scene is safe, not just from thugs or gunshots or assault victims and their attackers, but also from just problems at the scene, motor vehicle accidents, wires down, roadway conditions, all kinds of stuff. And this just falls into that and just really brings to mind exactly why we need to be really, really careful. So our hearts and thoughts and prayers go out to this community of Ghent, West Virginia. And I just, if any of them are listening to this podcast, please, please accept that I know the Medicast listeners are with them in spirit over the coming weeks and months as they deal with this tragedy. In some additional bad news for EMS, an EMT by the name of Janez Case of Clayton, Oklahoma, died in an accident when the ambulance she was riding in crashed on an icy highway in southeastern Oklahoma this past week. They said she was in the back of the ambulance riding with a patient to the hospital. The driver and the patient were hospitalized as well, and another passenger in the vehicle was not injured. But this is something that we've touched on and touched on many times about just provider safety in the back of the unit. You know, the patient is on the stretcher and strapped in. The driver's in the front seat with a seatbelt on. You better be wearing your seatbelts in the front seat. But what do we do in the back? You know, we have seatbelts in the back, but we don't often wear them. And, you know, I'm as guilty of this as everybody else is. There just needs to be some kind of a better solution for us so that we can provide care. And I guess some of it is on non-critical patients, we need to get in the habit of buckling ourselves into the bench when we're sitting there talking and helping the patient out, that we need to be in a position to do that without having to get up and down. You know, we can always unbuckle and reach for something and then buckle back in. And I guess that's something we're just going to have to start instituting, because none of us wants to be in a position to have a company funeral for a member because of something like this happening. Again, our hearts and thoughts and prayers go out to the community and the family and the colleagues of EMT Janez Case. And we hope that they are able to ride through this terrible tragedy and come out the other side and feel good about the good that Janez has done in her career as an EMT. And I think, you know, we just need to keep kind of focus on those kind of things, as well as how we can improve the safety that we operate under in the field. Okay, enough of the downer news for the week. I think we've all had enough of that. So what do you do to get drunk? What do the people you run into do to get high out there? Well, Yet another substance has cropped up as the way for people to get high. And apparently people are drinking hand sanitizer. You know that stuff you're at the hospital or in the back of your unit and you squirt some in your hand and you rub it around and rub it in back and between your fingers and it keeps your hands cleaned off between calls so you don't have to go washing your hands and getting your hands all dried out. Well, apparently, two different cases have been reported of men drinking the hand sanitizer for the alcohol contained in it. This has been reported in the New England Journal of Medicine. I got this link off of WebMD.com. And they just talk about the dangers that neither of the people actually died from doing this, but the substances in the hand sanitizer is toxic and it could be enough to kill somebody. The guy, one of the people was asked why he ingested the hand cleaner. He was actually seen with a gallon bottle of hand sanitizer drinking out of it. He's a prison inmate and got a hold of it there. But the active ingredient was 63% isopropyl alcohol. And he said, well, heck, that's higher than vodka. So that's why he drank it. Well, we need to just be aware. I'm constantly amazed at the things people do to get a high out there. And, hand sanitizer needs to be added to that list. You know, diagnostically, we talk about all the time the fact that people present differently with how they show symptoms. And it's especially the case in the situation between males and females. Many of the things that we know to be traditional signs and symptoms of certain disorders are really the traditional signs and symptoms of those disorders in men, because traditionally men were often studied instead of women because of the challenges of having to find out if women were pregnant and had other issues going on. So usually a lot of studies were based on studies of male patients. Now, a lot of that has changed, but in recent years and in the years to come, we're going to have a lot more information coming out there that's going to point out the differences in diagnoses. One of these is an article I found in Harvard Women's Health Watch, which is on a study called the Women's Ischemia Syndrome Evaluation Study, or the WISE study. And in this study, they looked at the differences between how men and women present with heart disease, and how the standard diagnostic tests don't often show the same things in men and women. Men can do stress tests and show blockages very quickly, and women show that they have clear arteries. However, other follow-up testing, things like ultrasounds of the blood vessels of the heart and angiograms, show differences in the blood vessels. Angiograms show that there's no problem, but ultrasounds show that there is a blockage. So what does this mean for us in the field? Well, it just points out to us that we need to be aware that, yeah, there's the traditional MI patient. There's the traditional cardiac patient that's going to present with chest pain, shortness of breath, diaphoresis, and you're going to see ST elevation changes in the EKG when you do a 12 lead. Just remember, 12 leads are only about 50% diagnostic for MIs, and they're considered not diagnostic at all for left bundle branch blockages when there's ST elevation. So you need to, you know, if you don't know that it's a new bundle branch block problem, then you can't diagnose it, right? Well, this is the same thing. It's going to come up with women. Women present differently. They may not have chest pain. They may be complaining of abdominal pain. They may have other symptoms. Their problems may be based in different parts of the body. We need to look at the whole picture. We need to get in the habit of being diagnosticians. That means scientists that know diagnosis. And we can do that for the things that we are specialists in cardiac health, in respiratory health, in motor vehicle trauma, those kind of things that are in our, you know, backyard, the things we're really good at. Whether you're an EMTB or a paramedic, you can be a good diagnostician and you can look at the whole picture and educate yourself on things like the Women's Ischemia Syndrome Evaluation Study, where they're learning about some of the other signs and symptoms that crop up. This particular study points out that while men may have a blockage in a major heart artery to cause their heart disease or their ischemia, women are more likely to have problems in the microvessels that can't be easily seen. And so they still need to be treated. Well, think about it. If nitroglycerin helps the large vessels, guess what? Nitroglycerin is going to help dilate those smaller vessels as well. And so we need to be proactive in how we treat patients for certain things. And so read this article, head on over to the link in the show notes and check it out and do what you can do to stay on top of these things. I'll make sure I can stay on top of this as well and bring all of this information to you as I find it. And if you find something before I do, you know what to do. Shoot it over to me at podmedic@mac.com or leave a voicemail at the MedicCast line and let me know about how to find out about it. So what do you do when you get that call to that same old patient that you've taken a million times before that really doesn't have a severe medical problem but needs a ride to the hospital? Well, the City of San Antonio Fire Department has come up with a novel approach to try to cut down on non-critical patient transports who really just need a ride. What they've done is they've instituted a taxi voucher program where they take patients to the hospital by taxi cab that don't need an actual ambulance trip. The service provides about 130,000 EMS calls a year, and of those, about 60,000 are taken to the hospital by ambulance. But it takes about 45 minutes for the crews to get turned around and back in service, and this takes crews off the streets for critical calls. So what they've done is they've instituted a voucher system where the patient is given a taxi voucher for those with non-life-threatening injuries. The paramedics and EMTs will perform an exam, they'll get a medical consult to release the patient, and then they hand the patient a taxi voucher, and that patient then can choose whichever hospital they want to go to, which really is even better because a lot of times we're forced to go to the closest facility. Since the program began in the beginning of January, about 9 people a day have used the vouchers to get them to the hospital, and they think this is a great success, and they're looking forward to getting more use out of this system. And I think that's a valuable way to handle things. You know, it doesn't cost that much for a taxi ride when you couple it with the fact that the unit's out of service and unable to respond on other calls. That is a huge loss of revenue and taxpayer spending that could be used in better ways. So I applaud this system. You know, we need to start thinking outside of the box on how we handle these kind of things. We need to make sure we're squared away on our patient refusal protocols. And we need to check with our medical director. And when you get an idea like this, you know, follow up on it. See if it makes sense. Get some help and do a study on what it might provide. Try to do a pilot program in your community and use it as a way to show that it's effective or not. This is something that we're going to need to do. And listen, folks, our supervisors and our medical directors and the local hospital administrators are painfully aware of the hospital overcrowding problem, of the overtaxed EMS and emergency room systems that are out there. And we need to be proactive. If we come up with a good idea, we need to be in a position to share that. So find out what your service does. Maybe they have a comment line. Maybe they have a system where you can propose ideas like this. And get out there and do things like encourage transport to urgent care centers rather than emergency rooms, taxi cab voucher programs, encouraging family members, you know, get a patient refusal, talk to your medical direction online and get permission to release the patient to the family and let them drive the patient. Sometimes they call you because they're just afraid. And when you get there and check the patient out and say, you know, it's really not that big a deal, you could drive them to the hospital. That gives them the option. You've given them some relief, and they know, all right, I can do the 10-minute drive to the hospital now. You're back on the street a little bit faster. You've not had to rearrange or remake your stretcher and do all the things you need to do to get back in service, and you're ready to go and squared away. So I applaud this system. It sounds like a great program. That's going to wrap up the news, and it's time to jump into this week's tip and trick of the week. This week, I'm going to do a review of the product VeinLight. The VeinLight is a venous access assistance device that lights up the subcutaneous skin and allows you to visualize deep venous access on patients that are difficult sticks. Great tool for new EMT with IV access add-ons or EMTIs or EMTPs out there. And I want to, first of all, talk about the company. The company Translight is the company that makes the VeinLight. And Translight, T-R-A-N-S-L-I-T-E, is a company. I contacted them to get some product information from them because I was interested in this product and really wanted to learn a little bit more about it. What I'd like to say, first of all, is I want to thank Translight for supporting podcasting. I immediately got an email back. They said, you know what? We can't just send you product information. We'd like to send you a complimentary copy of our product for you to try out. They sent me the VeinLight EMS, which is a small pocket version of their product, and wanted me to try it out. So I've done so, and I've used it, and I'm going to do a review here on it. But I want to thank them for being proactive and getting that out there and supporting the podcasting community. That said, I want to make sure you guys understand, just because somebody sends me something doesn't mean I'm going to give them a bang-up review. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to be completely honest with you guys and let you know whether the product's worth the money spent or not. And so I want to maintain that commitment of full disclosure on these kind of things. The VeinLight is a pocket handheld device. There's links in the show notes. You can head on over to the website. There's some great pictures and information on how it's used. There's three different products they have. They have the VeinLight EMS, which is a handheld pocket version. They have a small pocket version called the VeinLight PD, which is better designed for access in babies, newborns, and neonates because it's a smaller device and better able to visualize those veins. And then they have a larger version called the VeinLight, which actually is more of an office-based version that plugs into the wall and has a box associated with it. So what is my impression of this product? Well, first of all, I think it's sized about right for EMS providers. It fits kind of well in my gear pocket without adding too much extra weight. It uses 24 colored LED lights in a horseshoe shape that basically you lay against the skin, you hit the button, they turn on, and it lights the subcutaneous skin layer. And by backlighting from below, you start to see the dark venous lines in the skin. What are my impressions about its use in the field? Well, I liked it. It actually was fun to kind of use it to find veins in places I didn't ordinarily look for veins. Sometimes, especially in a very heavy person, it's hard to visualize veins on the inside of the forearm or in the AC area. And it worked pretty well for that. One thing that I did find, though, was that when you were looking for things in places like the AC where there was a joint and the VeinLight wasn't able to lay perfectly flat against the skin because their arm was bent slightly or there was a curvature to the body part, there was sometimes some difficulty in visualization. Now, I said the device is horseshoe-shaped, so if you lay it in such a way that the horseshoe is pointed distally to the patient, so you're laying it with the horseshoe ring facing down the arm, you're able to actually have a spot that's opened up for you to actually access venous access site there. So once you visualize something, you can hold the VeinLight in place, actually use the weight, the pressure of the device itself to occlude the vein, and you can attempt IV access directly there in the site. In the opening, the horseshoe opening of the device. You'll be able to see all this a little bit better if you head over to the site. But it does have some challenges, especially when there's a place that's a curved body part or in a joint like the elbow, the AC area access. And I also found that, you know, it was helpful for me in a couple of cases where I was having a patient that I really was having trouble finding good venous access. But, you know, I've been doing this for a while. And so I have my own little tricks and things that I do that I found to be a little bit easier for me in some of those situations. I did have one patient in a trauma situation that I was having trouble getting venous access. And this was very helpful when I missed an AC access because of a bump and it popped the catheter out and I blew that line. I was able to actually find a pretty good size vein on the inside of the forearm using this device. So it had its moments where it just absolutely saved my butt and helped me get venous access a little bit faster. But I think this is going to be a better tool for a newer EMTI or paramedic out there. And I think that that's where this product really shines. So if I were to give it a score of like 4 out of 5 stars, I think that would be a fair assessment. If you're a brand new EMT, person that's doing IVs in the field, you may find it even more helpful and maybe want to give it closer to 5 out of 5 stars. But I think for somebody that's been doing this for a while, that already has their trusted IV access sites, that's really very comfortable with IV access, this product is going to be maybe a 3 out of 5 or a 4 out of 5 stars for you. That said, you know, it's going to be great for that one time when you really just can't find anything. And it could be a way for you to really find venous access in a tough situation. So to recap, I'd like to say that the VeinLite EMS is a great product. I'm really excited about using it. Gave me some tips and tricks to use in the field that I didn't have access to when I really needed it. So I give it a 4 out of 5 stars. There were a few things that I wished were a little bit different or didn't work out quite the way I wanted them to. And that may be more to do with my technique than with the VeinLite. The VeinLite EMS retails for $240. You can get information about it over at VeinLite.com, VeinLite.com. There's a link in the show notes for this. And I want to thank again TransLite Company for sending me a copy of the VeinLite EMS to try out for the MedicCast for review. That said, the VeinLite that I have, I'm going to make available as a prize for MedicCast listeners. So you need to sign up for the new MedicCast newsletter. Head on over to the website. It's absolutely free. You click on the link in the show notes for the newsletter, or if you look in the upper right-hand corner of the site, just below the banner, you will see a link there to sign up for the MedicCast newsletter. It's a free newsletter. I don't spam that information out for anybody else, but I will send you information, and there's going to be tips and tricks that only go out to newsletter listeners. So when you guys get the newsletter for the new episode, there'll be a tip in there, some information, maybe a definition, something that you can use right away as a newsletter subscriber. And next week, I will be drawing from the pool of newsletter subscribers to give the VeinLite away. So I will be picking from that list. I will randomly generate a number, select that number off the list, and I will give away the VeinLite to that lucky subscriber to the MedicCast newsletter. So get on over and subscribe to the newsletter today. It's time now for this week's Med of the Week. And as I said earlier, we're going to look at the EpiPen auto-injector. For you EMTB providers out there and BLS providers, this is a true life-saving medication. For patients that need it, you're going to be the lifeline for them until you can get more definitive treatment either at the hospital or with an ALS rendezvous. Indications for the EpiPen auto-injector, and I'm getting this information off of Maryland's BLS protocol, but I think this is pretty standard across the field. Refer to your own protocols for any differences that you may want to be aware of. Indications are moderate to severe allergic reaction with respiratory distress present or mild reaction with a history of life-threatening allergic reaction. Again, this is a situation where you need to make sure you're getting a good medical history and finding out from the patient. You know, this is the important question you need to ask when you have patients that have allergic reactions or asthma attacks. Hey, when you felt like this before, what happened? Or when the last time you had a reaction like this, what happened? They may tell you, well, I'm just kind of getting hives and, you know, blotchy right now. But, you know, the last time, 15 minutes after this, I was having trouble breathing. That's an indication for you to be aware that you might be needing to use the EpiPen or want to go ahead and administer the EpiPen. You also want to use it for pediatric patients in cases of severe asthma. Some adverse effects you need to be aware of. This is epinephrine, okay? This is adrenaline. So you're going to have all the effects associated with, you know, the adrenaline response. Tachycardia, palpitations, angina or chest pains, headache, nausea and vomiting, dizziness, hypertension, nervousness and anxiety, and tremors. remember that you want to make sure you use your medical oversight. So if you have a severe reaction and you're having an imminent respiratory problem that's really just right there and very severe, you're going to want to go ahead and administer this. But you want to follow your own protocols. In Maryland, if it's not severe reaction, you want to go ahead and consult for medical direction first. There are no contraindications for the use of the EpiPen in the presence of anaphylaxis. You know, if they need it, they need it. This is what I mean by saying this is a true life-saving medication. The EpiPen auto-injector is available in an adult and pediatric size. The adult size is 0.3 milligrams, and the pediatric size is 0.15 milligrams. You want to check with your local protocols on what that means, but in Maryland, that is patients less than 3 years of age are going to get the 0.15 milligram dose, and the adult dose is going to anyone 3 years of age or older. Additional doses may be required, and you should be aware of that. This is one of those situations where the patient's going to have a prescribed EpiPen. Some of the prescribed EpiPens now have a dual dose function. So they actually give one dose and then have a second injection in there ready to go if needed. So be aware of what your supplies are, what kind of injector your service uses, and you want to educate yourself on how to administer auto-injectors again. As always with any medication, you want to remember to check out your 5 R's. You want to check out right patient, right dose, right route, right medication, and right expiration date before you administer any medication. When you're going to have the patient there, you're going to want to administer this in their upper thigh in the area of their quadriceps muscle. This is a big, thick muscle. You're going to want to press their knees together. You're going to want to put your legs on the opposite side of their knees so that they can't swing their knee away from the injection. You're kind of bracing their legs so that you have something to press against. You're going to bring the injector down. You're going to press firmly. Keep your thumb off the back of the injector. Use your closed fist and press down firmly. Hold it there for a count of 10 seconds, then release, and then put it in the sharps box. For those of you that are testing out there, if you don't put your Epi injector away in a sharps box, that is a critical fail point in about every EMS service and registry exam I've ever heard of. So you want to make sure that you have a sharps box handy, or at the very least verbalize, I'm putting this in the sharps container. Okay, you're going to want to then reevaluate your patient. You're going to want to assess their respiratory function a few minutes into the treatment and see if it's gotten any better. You're going to want to consult with medical command and get permission to go ahead and administer a second injection if needed. This is something you might want to go ahead and do even if they haven't exhibited an ongoing problem after your injection. This is kind of one of those cover your butt things. Hey doc, I've administered one Epi auto injector. The patient appears to be experiencing some relief. I request permission for orders to go ahead and administer a second injection if needed if the patient's respiratory distress returns. The doctor will probably give you that order. You want to present it in the right way and then go ahead and ask for it. If they don't, they may say no, go ahead and reconsult if that happens. But you want to give yourself that option. So, you know, when you have medical command, use their time wisely and line yourself up for additional doses as needed. So this is the EpiPen. I have a link in the show notes to the WebMD site on EpiPen. They have a lot of information about the EpiPen device, side effects, precautions, interactions, and what to do if you have an overdose on the EpiPen in a patient in the field. And this is this week's Med of the Week. And that's going to wrap up this week's episode of the MedicCast. I'd like to thank all of you for checking out this week's episode. I'm going to be coming back next week with some information on cold-related emergencies. So you want to check back here. It's that time of year. We're running into a lot of that. And you need to be aware of how to treat and deal with cold environmental emergencies. So check back next week for episode 53 and that information. Thanks for supporting the show. Remember, there's 4 ways you can support the MedicCast. You can visit the site at www.mediccast.com and go ahead and check out all of the posts there during the week and contribute and participate by leaving comments on individual postings. It's always appreciated, and you guys can get a conversation going about different things over there. And of course, make sure you sign up for the newsletter. The newsletter for the Medicast is something I've instituted recently. You're going to get some information, some tips and tricks that are only available on the newsletter, and it's absolutely free. I don't sell your email information. I don't give that away to anybody else. It's just for my use to help keep you in touch with the Medicast. And you can check it out over at the website by going to medicast.com. And in the upper right-hand corner, clicking the link for the newsletter, you'll see it there. Fill out the information. You'll get a sign-up newsletter with a tip right there on navigating the site. And then each week, and maybe occasionally elsewise during the month, I will be sending you an email with information on the podcast and information on a tip and trick that is just for you Newscast subscribers. And, of course, Newscast subscribers are also eligible to win the Vein Light next week. In the drawing, make sure you're signed up by Saturday next week. That'll be Saturday the 10th. Sign up by Saturday night. On Sunday the 11th, I will be drawing a name from the Newscast subscribers and the newsletter subscribers, and I will be giving away the Vein Light to that lucky individual. So check it out and make sure you get over there and subscribe. Again, I want to thank all of you for contributing to the Medicast podcast and being a member of this site and this community for the last year. I'm looking forward to great things happening with the Medicast over the coming year in 2007 and into 2008. So I want to thank you for being here for the past year, and I want to encourage you to share the Medicast and continue growing this community over the coming year as Medicast heads into year two. I'll wrap up, as I always do, with some great PodSafe music from the band Kill Lola. Found this over at the PodSafe Music Network at music.podshow.com. And Kill Lola has a song called Appetite. You can check out the link in the show notes for the band site. And if you'd like to, you can actually purchase the song over at the iTunes store. And there's a link that'll take you right over there to do that. Remember that all of the music that's available in the iTunes store that I've played is available at a link in the Songs from the Medicast list over at the iTunes store. I'm Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic. Thanks for listening to the Medicast this past year. Until next time, scene safety, BSI.
Another lonely tale, as he thinks, who could it have been?